Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. My name is Sam Otten from the University of Missouri, and with me are a couple co-authors of a new book from Corwin Press. The book is Activating Math Talk. And joining me here is Dan Heck and Kristen Malzahn, who are both from Horizon Research, and they'll also be speaking on behalf of their other co-author, who is Paola Stein. But Dan and Kristen, thanks so much for speaking with me.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
So Activating Math Talk, I actually was able to work with Dan on a project that involved math discourse and talk moves and working with teachers to get them to invite more math communication and talk in the classroom. So I'm always excited to see books and new works on this topic of getting math talking. And I know this particular book was rooted in a lot of professional development work that you all have done over years and years. So I wanted to start maybe with Dan, if you can just speak to how did your experience and the author group's experiences with PD inform and lead to this book?
Yeah, so this is a culmination of about 10 years of effort working with elementary teachers in developing and delivering and refining professional development with them. And that's really what we had originally created, is a professional development program, which still exists, and we're working on that as well. But we were invited to create something that spoke directly to teachers with this book. And so we wanted it to be a professional learning resource that reflected everything we know about effective professional development as well. And so that was a struggle to create something that isn't just it's a book, but not just a book that you read. And we didn't want it to just be a kind of buy it and try it kind of book either. We wanted it to be a working resource. So, you know, building off the things we learned and creating and ourselves delivering and then observing and researching our professional development program, we built in a lot of resources that mirror those things we know about effective professional development. So there's a content and a learning focus. We root all of the work on pedagogy around the content that's being taught and the learning that's being engendered through that pedagogy. And we really target conceptual understanding and procedural fluency as the goals for students. You know, we wanted it to be something that's strongly connected to practice. And even though it's a print resource, we want active engagement of the reader. So we put in a lot of examples from classrooms and vignettes that are, we call examine practice vignettes, that are to be studied and analyzed, not just, again, kind of read as illustrations, but they're learning resources. You know, another thing about the program itself is built to span a year's worth of work with teachers engaged with one another and with a facilitator. So again, we tried to create a book that would be a useful resource over the course of a year or more for teachers. So we, for each of the techniques, which we'll talk more about later, there's a kind of a getting started guide so that you can take it and use the technique almost immediately in your instruction. But then it has a lot of other resources to try to help make that not a kind of a one-time thing. But so we put in a set of what we called signs of success and caution signals. So these are things that teachers can keep in mind to understand and work to improve their practice. And then we also have a section on each technique called improving and adapting. So we understand that, you know, the first time or the second time someone uses one of these techniques, you know, it's going to be unpolished. And there are things that you can do repeatedly, and students will get used to them and teachers will get used to them. And so again, it's a learning resource, but learning in and through practice. That's kind of our goal. And then the thing that's really difficult, I think, to do, it's difficult in professional development, but very difficult in this kind of resource, is to help teachers have kind of a collective experience. But we built into the book a section called Discuss with Colleagues in each chapter. And so there are some questions that a professional learning community or a grade level team could use if they were taking on this resource together.
So it sounds like a lot of good lessons from your PD experiences getting woven into book form, but in a way that tries to live beyond the book. And I like how you talked about, you know, that there is a goal of balancing conceptual with procedural fluency, but also all of what you were talking about is directed towards mathematical talk that is going to be conceptually rich talk, or that's going to help students kind of push their learning forward, mm-hmm. right? So that is the also the kind of the overarching theme.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should say, you know, we really mean all students participating in powerful talk. And that's the techniques are kind of scaffolds and structures to do that, ways to invite students in, ways to deepen the conversations, ways to go beyond just participation, but to, you know, meaningful contributions from all students.
So can you take us through, and maybe Kristen, can you take us through a little bit more of the organization of the book? Because I heard a lot of great things that Dan was describing. I'm wondering how those will kind of be experienced and laid out in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. The book has a total of 17 chapters, and that's broken up into five main parts. 11 of those 17 chapters, of course, are for the techniques, and we won't go through each of those today, but we'll be able to talk maybe a little bit about a couple of them just to give you a flavor of that. But that's kind of the second part of the book. The first part of the book, or the first two parts, really gives the reader some grounding in the conceptual ideas or the theory behind productive discussions. In fact, the very first chapter is what is high quality discourse? And so we talk a lot about the different characteristics of discourse. And we have one of our main frameworks or our foundation documents that we refer to is called the Math Discourse Matrix. And that is one of the resources that readers will find right off the bat in the first chapter. And what that does is it helps the readers understand that there are different types of discourse. And we think about these different pattern ways in which teachers and students are engaged in discussions using different dimensions such as questioning, explaining, listening, and different modes of communication. And that the ways in which they're engaged in those dimensions really results in a different type of discourse. And there are four types that we talk about. One type is correcting, eliciting, probing, and then responsive. And it's really the probing and the responsive discourse that we consider to be high quality. What students are doing, what that kind of looks like, I guess, is students are really taking responsibility for the discussions, and they are engaged in active listening and in questioning each other, in explaining, providing justifications, and really making connections among the ideas. So it's not just sharing out their ideas, but making sure that they see the connections, mathematical connections among those. And so this first chapter really gives the reader an idea of what those different discourse types are and what it looks like or what it sounds like in a classroom. And we feel like if you don't have that basis, that theoretical basis, you don't know where you're going. And so using those techniques is not going to be very powerful unless you know what the end goal is. So that gives the grounding. The other chapters in the beginning also help teachers think about ways in which they can establish a discourse community in their classroom. So we draw on some of the Math Talk community resources. We think about the different instructional talk moves. We also think about the five practices. And so we talk about how to best orchestrate a mathematical discussion. And so we hope that teachers are going to be able to take this into their classroom and start establishing that discourse community with their students. So the students will know what is expected of them. You know, what does it mean to engage in mathematical conversations? What are those norms and those routines? And then the next part is really thinking about how do you plan a lesson that is going to promote responsive discourse. And so here we talk about a framework that we call the Math Teaching Guide. And this is basically a way to show a lesson cycle. So it has five different phases. Three of those phases are the enactment of the lesson that I think the math community would know about. There's this launch, explore, and discuss. And then the other two phases are things that are happening on the outside of that. So the lesson planning phase and then the reflection phase. And the reason why this particular framework is so important is because we situate the techniques within this lesson cycle. And so teachers are thinking about, okay, I'm going to launch my lesson. What are some of the different purposes for launching a lesson? And now I'm going to attach a technique that really gets at that purpose. You know, teachers aren't just using them haphazardly. They're saying, okay, I have a particular goal in mind for what I want students to do in this lesson. What's a technique that I can use to attain that goal? We talk about in the book how we know readers are most likely going to want to jump right ahead to looking at the technique chapters. And we say, don't do that. We really encourage you to first, you know, read these first four chapters, get a grounding in what this is all about. And that's going to help lead to more effective use of the techniques later on.
So I think myself and a lot of the listeners are probably curious about some of the techniques. So I want to just ask you, I mean, people can go to the book Activating Math Talk to get the full set, but I want to just ask you while you're here, if you have a favorite one that you might want to just describe a little bit for us.
That's like asking who's your favorite kid. I'll pick one from the launch phase for me that I think is quite powerful is story problem retelling. So one thing we should say about the techniques is that these were all derived from or connected to instruction in literacy. We worked with colleagues at North Carolina State University who are elementary literacy educators, because instructional conversations have a long history in literacy instruction, and especially around comprehension and meaning making. And that's a lot of what we're looking for in math discourse. So story problem retelling is one of those techniques that has its roots in literacy, and its main purpose is to help students comprehend what a task is asking them to do. We think, you know, particularly about story problems as stories, and the technique asks students to, once they've read or heard a story problem, to retell it in a framing that gives them a point of reference that makes sense to them, and that they understand the context and the mathematical aspects of that story that they're given, or in some cases, it's a story that they're creating from, you know, a very open-ended kind of task. And it's one that solving is like completing the story. So they should understand how far the problem takes them and kind of what it's going to mean to complete that story. You know, when we say math talk, we often think about students verbalizing things, and that's certainly always going to be a part of these techniques. But one of the things that's really nice about story problem retelling, especially for very young students, is it really does invite using kind of multiple modes of representation and communication. So we think of story problem retelling could be happened by acting out a story problem, the actions that are in the story problem, or using a storyboard, a felt board, or a smart board to actually, you know, act out with characters or manipulatives what's taking place so that it becomes active for students. The other thing I really like about this one is, well, you know, we situate story problem retelling in the launch phase of the lesson, a technique for that phase. But in the improving and adapting guide, for this one, we also think about that it could be used when discussing a solution, wrapping up discussion about a task. So students could be completing the story by retelling what the problem was, what it asked them to do, and how they approached it and came to an answer as a conclusion to the story. So they make sense of that answer in the context of what the problem asked for and what the answer means in light of that problem.
My turn to choose a favorite one. I'm going to pick a technique from the discuss phase of the lesson, and this one is called the math talk chain. And what I really like about this particular technique is that it focuses on helping students listen actively to their peers and make connections among different ideas that are shared. So this is a particular, it's kind of a contrived format, but like I said, it's happening during the discuss phase. And so a teacher most likely is going to put out a prompt and ask students to share their ideas about how they worked on a problem, maybe their solution strategy and what they came up with. And so one student will start and they will share. And then another student, if they want to share, what they need to do first is they need to restate what their peer just said. So there's that active listening. In order to do that, I need to listen to what was said first. And then they need to make either some kind of connection between what their peer said and what they want to say, or it could be even asking a question you know, I heard you say X, and I'm not really sure what you mean by that. Can you clarify? Or I heard you say, and I disagree with that because I got something else. And so it really does, like I said, force the students to listen to what ideas are being shared and help to make the conversation more coherent and more connected, which is really what we want when we think about productive discussions. You know, we talk about these techniques as scaffolds and you put them in place, but then after a while you can remove this. You know, you can remove the fact that, you know, they have to say, I heard you say blank, I think blank. That can kind of be removed because then it just becomes a norm. It becomes the way in which the students in the classroom are talking about mathematics. And I think teachers that we've worked with in the past have talked about that, have said, you know, I started by giving sentence frames and they had to follow the structure of how they were going to respond. But then I could take those away and it just became the way that we were talking, very natural. So I really like that technique.
Yeah. Do those chains sometimes build up to be multiple like links long? Like, does it start to be like, I heard this student say this, I heard the next student say this, and I'm going to add a third thing. Like, does it sometimes build up like that?
I absolutely believe that it does. We were able to see some of these techniques in action with our teachers, and we definitely heard some of that happening. And in fact, when you talk about these links or these chains, we do have one teacher in particular who used paper links, and that was kind of her incentive or motivation. You know, who wants to talk next, and you can help put this link together. And so it was like this model, this visual model of all the links that they were making in the classroom. Yeah. So that was pretty neat.
Yeah, I could imagine it also like kind of forking off and to be like, we had some ideas to start and then actually we went in two different ways with two different ideas. And it, mm-hmm. Yeah, I could definitely have fun. But just all the possibilities that happen once you start to bring the talk out and you start to sort of ask these rich questions and get students talking about the mathematics. It can also just make teaching more fun. Like I just know from my own experience, when you have those discussions happening, it's sort of a more invigorating experience for the teacher too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So there's quite a bit more that people can find in the book. I want to just ask one more question about the book, Activating Math Talk from Corwin. I want to just imagine, okay, it's the summer and maybe some teachers, maybe by themselves or maybe with some colleagues, you know, pick up the book and they take a look at it and they're interested in doing some of this work on the math talk in their classroom. What would you hope to see if you visited their classroom next year? Like, what would you look for? What would make you sort of sparkle with joy at what came from the book?
You know, Kristen had alluded to this too, but one is that the techniques are placed very purposefully that, you know, when they choose to do math bet lines or they're going to set up their groups and talk triangles, that there's a clear reason for that in terms of helping the students learn how to engage in productive discussions about mathematics and to learn mathematics through communication, that they all should have that focus. I think the other thing that we've seen is that the students, you know, do latch onto these and learn. They learn the kind of parameters of each technique, and they get excited. There are a couple that they really like to do. Math bet lines is one. I think talk chain is another one that the students they like the challenge of it, but I think they appreciate the structure of it too. You know, and then substantively, it is this probing and responsive discourse that, you know, if we saw conversations that fell in those arenas, that would be a wonderful outcome for teachers and students. And what that, you know, really means is trying to get at the depth behind students' ideas, not just kind of what and how they're thinking, but why they think that way and how it draws on past knowledge or leads to new questions. And if that's the substance of those discussions, then we think the techniques and the focus on math talk is really working to create a great learning environment.
I would echo a lot of what Dan said. Dan mentioned earlier that one of the reasons we chose these particular techniques and that they were adapted from literacy instructions because we felt like teachers most likely knew what they were already or had already used some of these in their own instruction. And so they were easy to use as far as, you know, let's go in and let's just try it, you know, and so it's something that's readily available and you can go in and do. And so I would hope that teachers would go in and start trying some of these, knowing that it's not going to be perfect right off the bat, but to try it and to learn from that experience. And so one of the things that we really encourage in the professional development is that it's not just about using the techniques with your students, but it's about reflecting on how that played out in the classroom. What went well? What was challenging about it? What could you do better next time to improve the instruction? And the ways in which you think about that is that going back to the math discourse matrix, you use that as an analysis tool in a way. So how were my students engaging, you know, in these conversations? And what about the technique really help them to engage in those ways? And what are some areas in which we still need to work on? So it's a very informative thing, you know, as well for thinking about what are the subsequent lessons going to be about? What are the next steps going to be? So I would hope that teachers not only are using the techniques, but they're being very reflective about their practice and using the resources within the book to help them improve.
And just real quick, where could people find the book if they wanted to pick it up or order it?
Probably the best place is to go to the Corwin website. That's us.corwin.com and search for it there, Activating Math Talk. It's also available on Amazon, but I think the Corwin Press gives you some discount options as well.
Dan Heck and Kristen Malzahn are both from Horizon Research, and they're two of the co-authors on the book Activating Math Talk for elementary teachers, and it's from Corwin. And I have a final question just for a little bit of fun. We're at the start of summer here in the United States, and you've been writing, the book's coming out, you've been reading and working on a lot of math ed, but I'm curious this summer what you might be doing separate from math ed, maybe to relax, maybe to have a little bit of fun.
So I, a little over 10 years ago as an adult, took up springboard diving as a hobby, and we have a really good diving facility and coaches that are the pool that we belong to. So, you know, especially this year, I haven't been able to go indoors for the entire year. So it's been since last summer that I've been able to get on a diving board. It's just such an interesting challenge and such a great release. It just kind of, the other things kind of melt away when I can focus on that. And it's a thrill.
Yeah. And do you watch the Olympics in different ways now since you've taken up this hobby?
I do. I even know some of the people that are competing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because either, you know, people that I've that are local that train here, or because I go to a lot of different universities in my work, I've been able to go and practice with different teams and clubs. So it's a small and very friendly and inviting community. So yeah, I can watch the Olympics, and I see people that I personally know.
That's cool. Yeah. I hope it's all safe, and I hope it all, you know, works out well this summer. Kristen, anything planned?
Well, it's funny that you talk about the Olympics, because I was actually going to say, I'm just going to enjoy watching the Olympics. My daughter is a competitive year-round swimmer. And so we love watching the swimming portion of the Olympics. And, you know, we're all excited about the trials that are happening in Omaha. And so we'll be doing a lot of watching of the Olympics. But then I'm also finally going to be able to take a vacation, which, you know, we all probably haven't been able to do that because of the pandemic. So I'm going to take a week and go to the beach and just, I don't know, do nothing. That will be nice.
Well, thanks so much for taking this time, though, to talk about your book, and all the best, all the success for it.
Thank you so much, Sam.